Jack Edwards brought to you by Norfolk Power Equipment, Lord & Taylor's Men's Department. Now I know where all the damn ties are coming from. And 495 Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram.
Jack, name that artist. Dale. Jack or Dale, name that artist. Give me a guess.
Mocha Milkshake.
I love it. It's all right.
Hello, Jack.
How you doing, Dale?
Happy birthday to you, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. You know,
it's a birthday? Today's your birthday?
It was Monday. Days ago. Monday was his birthday.
Say,
yeah.
How do we not know this? We should have something for Jack. Cake.
Yeah, pie in the face. Isn't broadcasting funny? You know, it almost sounds like you guys have done this show before.
A couple times.
Thought
at least the last week or so or thereabouts. Hey, we were just talking about Jerome Iginla, and all of us are of the opinion that the Bruins, they may not need to, quote-unquote, re-sign Jerome Iginla, but there's no doubt in my mind they will. Your opinion?
Is there a line that you would trade those three guys for, Lucic, Krejci, and Iginla, elsewhere in the NHL? There isn't for me.
Yeah, Kane and Toews and whoever would be close, but yeah, I like this line a lot.
Because, you know, for instance, where the heck were we? Phoenix, maybe? Iginla had that shift where he was in the attacking zone for a minute and 48 seconds. That's a triple shift. And it's not like he was just scooting around, leaning on his stick. He was plastering guys. He was laying guys out on the boards, winning puck battles, racing across the ice, keeping the puck from going out of the zone, taking a hit to move the puck. I mean, the guy plays such a Boston Bruins brand of hockey. It's not about the records that he's setting or the guys like Johnny Bucyk that he's passing on the all-time list. It's about W's. And, you know, I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but if the Bruins are so fortunate as to be able to win that thing again, that's the handoff. You know, the question's always, you know, after the captain gets it, who gets it next? There's no question about it that Jerome Iginla is the handoff.
Is that right? Really?
Oh, yeah. That's because it's always like, does it go to an alternate captain?
It's always the guy who's tried so hard for so long.
Like Ray Bourque getting the cup passed to him by Joe Sakic. You know, I mean that's always the question.
And he got to the final once with Calgary, but
seventh game
beat by Tampa Bay.
Yeah, seventh game in the ultimate clutch and grab era. You know, every once in a while, NHL Network shows the 2004 Stanley Cup final. Iginla gets fouled at least four times a shift, and there's no call. It's like hooking, holding, interference, you name it. They did anything they could to slow the guy down. He still had an unbelievable final.
Yeah. I want to ask both of you guys this, Jack and Dale, Mutt, but the hockey gurus, Jack and Dale. And Mutt, if you have some insight on this question.
I'm listening. Get to the question.
Please jump in.
Let's go.
Is there something you saw from Jerome Iginla or something you've seen this year that you didn't know he had in his game, in his repertoire? I mean, you guys have been watching him for a long time, but seeing him every day, I'm sure there's a wrinkle or two that was a revelation to you.
It wasn't so much a revelation, but an affirmation of the incredible consistency that the guy has. And it's not about the goals he scores, because he went through a few stretches, especially early on, where he was not that productive in terms of goal scoring, but his work ethic and his work rate never slacked. And that was it for me.
I think the thing for me, and I knew from afar that he had this reputation, but until you see it day in and day out, I didn't realize the leadership that he brought to the table. I think he has single-handedly been the beacon of an example for Milan Lucic. This is how you're prepared to play every day. Yeah. This is what you bring to the table every night. And Milan Lucic has brought it to the table almost every night this year. And he started in the playoffs last year, to his credit. But I think Jerome Iginla has shown Milan this is how you do it.
And you know, that's a really interesting idea that you bring up. And I haven't heard someone voice it before. But if you think that through, much in the way that we were talking about Matt Duchene the other night, where Matt Duchene's a really young player. I think he's 22.
But he's a terrific player.
But he's an old school guy. He's the kind of guy that would sit around the dressing room till 4 in the morning listening to hockey stories and anecdotes and tendencies of players, because you never know when one little nugget like that is going to pay off for you. Maybe it's 10 years down the line. This used to be just de rigueur in baseball. You know, guys would just stay in the clubhouse. And Brick was mentioning how that kind of went away when these guys became walking international corporations. But Iginla is an old school guy, and Lucic definitely has a lot of that old school in him. And it's interesting you say that, Dale, because Lucic has shown those little tiny things in his game that have been different this year, that have given him more productivity when the points aren't coming. And that hasn't been too often for him this year. But he's doing those little things so well.
Real quick on Aguinla. Last year it was fashionable to point out his failures with Pittsburgh and say, "Go, we're glad the Bruins didn't get him." Well, this year, the theory is, Jack, that he is more comfortable and he's playing better because he's adopted the city more than with Pittsburgh, that it was a rush and that he got his roots down in Boston, and because of that, he is more comfortable. Do you believe that is a part of why you've seen a better player this year than you saw in the playoffs last year with Pittsburgh?
It's a part. My guess, though, is that it's more the system and the style of the two teams. Pittsburgh's the most top-heavy team in the National Hockey League. It has to be. That's the way they've built the franchise, and they're doing okay so far. You know, they've won a cup with this core, and they're going to contend for another cup this year. They're capable of winning it again this year. But Boston is much more roll the four lines, outwork them, crush teams under your weight in the third period. And, you know, in the last 3 weeks, that's exactly what the Bruins have been doing. And Aguinla has been a flag bearer in that kind of march.
What was the best thing you took away from the 12-game winning streak?
Different ways to win. You know, whether it's a hot goalie surviving a bad first period. You know, the Bruins went through that extraordinary streak. What was it? Like 8 consecutive games not allowing a first period goal against.
Patrice had the first goal of the game in all 3 games on the road trip.
That was an interesting point. Yeah. Yeah. And that's you know, just whoever has the turn to lead will lead. And whether that's Gregory Campbell, you know, getting in a fight and winning it against a guy he probably shouldn't have beat, or Thornton scoring a goal off of Paille's sensational wheeling zinger of a centering pass, or the studs delivering in the clutch. It's different ways to win.
I don't think he'll win because he arrived too late. But I can't tell you how Kevin Miller's game has grown on me, game by game by game. And we were at the game the other night. You were there Monday. I was there. Brick, Jamie, we were all just there as fans the other night. And I turned to Brick after the fight with Travis Moan, and I said, when video of this gets around the league, nobody's going to want to go in the corner with him.
So true. So true. I mean, that was as hard as I've seen a guy punched all season long. And he did it twice. And Travis Moan is not exactly a wallflower of a guy. He's a tough player. You know, he was Thornton's teammate when they won the cup in Anaheim in 07. He was part of that immense grinder line that they had. And, for him to get dropped twice in one bout was pretty impressive stuff. Kevin Miller's been a huge surprise. You know what? He could win seventh player. It's coming up fast, but he could win.
I would give it to Soderberg. But Miller, he's part of a conversation. You asked about the winning streak. The fact they're able to have this winning streak, Jack, and rotate defensemen on basically a nightly basis, and Claude has been able to mix and match pairs, get guys rest, and by the way, not play Chara crazy minutes. In the last 10 games since the trading deadline, 3 games out of the 10 he's played 26 or more minutes. And by the way, you won all but one of those games. And if you would have told me they'd be rotating guys in and out, not replaying Chara, I would have said, okay, then they have a winning record, but they wouldn't go 12-1 or 10-1, 9-1, whatever it is since the trading deadline. What kind of luxury is that for Claude to be able to mix and match? And what kind of benefit will it have come playoff time looking at these different pairings?
Well, you know, we spin it back a year, and when they had to call up Bartkowski and Krug, everybody's going,
they got no chance
now. That's the way it goes.
They got to play those two plus Dougie Hamilton against the Rangers.
Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, nice run while it lasted. So, hats off to the coaching staff, Bruce Cassidy and Kevin Dean in Providence for getting those guys ready. And hats off to Peter Chiarelli for so quickly developing the kind of institutional depth that, by the way, Pittsburgh has. Because the way Pittsburgh runs its team is it's got its top two lines, its top two sets of defensemen, and then everybody else is, you know, well, I'm exaggerating here, but a lot of the other players are just rotated. Because there are guys in Wilkes-Barre who are just as good, who are, if there isn't production from those bottom six forwards and bottom pair of D, they know there are guys who are just as good as them who might be a little hungrier down in Wilkes-Barre. And maybe the Bruins had to address that, but Chiarelli addressed it quickly. It's a great luxury, Mutt. It's a great luxury.
I have a two-part question for you.
John Dennis speaking.
But this is easy. The part one is going to be very short, and I think he knows where it's going. What is the most demanding position in sports?
defenseman in the National Hockey League without a question.
All right,
as every school child knows.
All right, everybody knows that. All right, so part two.
And Kluzak will tell you about every single time.
What is the likelihood of Dennis Seidenberg? These reports, and Pierre McGuire was the first one to put it out there.
I almost called this morning when they brought it up.
What's the likelihood of Dennis Seidenberg returning for the playoffs?
I would say zero, but I've been wrong before. And here's why. Remember Jerry Rice? And how quickly he came back from a blown ACL. What did he blow it out in the first or second week of the NFL season? Then he made this miraculous comeback, and he hit all his numbers in therapy, and they said, you're good to go. And then he had a non-contact blowout of the same knee in the end zone. Remember that? Mm-hmm. It was on a Monday night football game. Yep. I think it was the primetime game for sure. I had the good fortune when I was working at that four-letter beast in Bristol, Connecticut, to be in the operating room when Dick Stedman, the famous ACL reconstruction pioneer.
You said good fortune?
Yes, it was. It was. Okay. When Peekaboo Street had her reconstruction done in Vail, Colorado. And he allowed us, and Peekaboo allowed us to shoot the operation. It's amazing. It's like woodshop in there, but I mean, it's just way, way, way more precise. Seidenberg had what's known as a patellar tendon splice ACL correction, okay, ACL reconstruction. And what they do is they measure the middle third of the patellar tendon. If you put your hand on your knee and you slide it down forward, there's that little indentation where it's kind of soft until you flex your quad muscles, your thigh muscles, and then that tendon tightens up. That's what keeps you from falling on your face every single time you take a step forward, if not for the patellar tendon, okay? They take the middle third of that, which is just an enormously strong tendon, and they take a chip out of your tibia, a chip out of the top of the bottom of your patella, which is your kneecap, and they send that in through the bottom of your femur into the top of your tibia, all right, the femur being the thigh bone, the tibia being the weight-bearing bone in the lower leg. And they use the little chips from drilling the holes and tap them in around the bone ends that are on that patellar tendon, okay? They put that sucker in place. When the bones grow back into that hole and you've now got the middle third of your patellar tendon is your new ACL, that sucker is as strong as anything. However, the patellar tendon needs to grow back. And that was Jerry Rice's problem, that the patellar tendon isn't strong enough. And you ask a lot of guys who go through patellar tendon splice surgeries, that is the most painful and difficult part of getting the strength back. And there isn't a whole lot that will make that grow back other than just time. And, you know, yeah, sports medicine has come a long, long, long way. Dennis Seidenberg is an incredibly valuable asset to the Boston Bruins. I don't know if you take the risk of blowing up a guy's career. I mean, what if Derek Englund, what if he comes back in the Eastern Conference Final and Derek Englund falls across the same knee that Corey Conacher fell across? Good night. End of career.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with my friend Jack.
First
excellent.
Of all,
well, that's what makes talk radio go.
If you've got a medical school response like Jack
no,
does,
God,
let's
no,
see.
No,
let's
no,
see.
No, no, no. He's out of my league in that regard. I never got to see Peekaboo Street's knee laid open. I'm going to respectfully disagree to this extent. And Jack knows this better than I do, by the way. Dennis Seidenberg is a freak.
Yeah,
he
well,
is
that's
a
true.
Freak.
That's true.
He, you know, in the same way Adrian Peterson is a freak in the National Football League, and came back sooner than anybody expected because of that. I know, and you know this to be true, and now that it's public, he's been working out for a while now.
Yeah, yeah.
According to Cam Neely, he's skating now.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Nobody knows what's going on. And he's the one who told his friends on the Carolina Hurricanes, I think I'm going to be back for the playoffs. Now, whether that's just the carrot dangling at the end of the stick, but it's really unnecessary for them to do that. Because, first of all, he's going to bust his rear end anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And second of all, if you're talking about next October, you got plenty of time. He doesn't plan on playing next October. He plans on playing, now I'm not saying
in late
first
May.
Round of the right. playoffs. That's not what we're discussing here at all.
Right.
I think he feels that if they got a couple of rounds into this thing, if they got to an Eastern Conference final, he could give them some.
Yep. And you know, there would be rust. But, I'm going to play the conservative card on it. It'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. You know one thing. The guy will have to be carried away from the ice if he thinks he's ready and he's hit his numbers.
Well, and that's my question. My knee hurts when you start talking about that surgery.
Yeah.
who makes this decision, Jack? Is it 50-50 he and the medical staff? Can they hone him in if he wants to come back and play? And they're concerned, like you are, that patella tendon is not grown back?
You don't think Jack Edwards is on the medical staff?
Just hear him now. He's basically the team doctor.
Well, one of the greatest surgeons in the world, Peter Asnes, did the surgery. So you start with that, is that he's got the absolute best chance to make a healthy comeback at whatever time he makes it. We have seen in the Bruins a very conservative approach. They probably could have pushed Bergeron back in when he was coming back from the concussion, and they were making a deeper and deeper run. They didn't. They have on many occasions held a guy back for concern for him, and not just in the concussion scenarios. They're not going to put a player's livelihood and career at undue risk. But yeah, from the surgeon to the therapist, Scott Waugh, to Don Del Negro, the head athletic trainer, I'm sure that Derek Rapucci, the team, a masseuse?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's working on Seidenberg too, and they're asking him, do you feel anything that's not feeling right? I mean, they are extraordinarily thorough. Peter Chiarelli leaves no details to chance.
No truth to the rumor, by the way, that when Jack was watching the Peekaboo Street operation, he was saying, "Get up!" No truth to the rumor. He didn't once do that. I'm just saying. Now, believe it or not, I'm going to be able to tie Bill Belichick into this conversation, but you're going to have to stay tuned to see how. Skating a little 4-on-4 here in this segment, Dale Arnold, Michael Holly, Mike Mednansky, and Jack Edwards all together here. Earlier today at the owners' meetings in Orlando, Florida, the National Football League, I guess it's the competition committee that decides these things. The competition committee heard a presentation from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, who was trying to sell them on the possibility of a rule change that he advocates.
In the last decade, we haven't seen a missed field goal from under 19 yards. That's been 100%. The PAT percentages in the last two decades have not gone below 98%. And I want to say in six of the last 9 years, they've been over 99%. Last year was 99.6 or whatever it was. So we're really talking about a non-competitive play. I can't imagine the fans are excited about seeing a play that's 99.66% accurate. I personally feel that we've also made it virtually illegal to block a kick. We can't hit the center, we can't overload, we can't push, we can't jump, we can't land on anybody, so it's very, very difficult to competitively play the play. The proposal was to the 25-yard line, which puts those kicks in the 85% range, somewhere in there, which we felt was a more competitive play, not married to that yard line in particular. Just say the general concept behind the proposal is to make it a more competitive play than 99.6%. I'd also just say on a personal level, I think the replay rules are very lengthy, obviously, and confusing. And of course, before every game, the officials come over to us and talk about, remind us what can and can't be reviewed, and the times they have to talk to each other about that. It's 4 pages of rules on replay. I don't really know them, and I should, but I mean, it's hard for me because they change. I can't imagine the fans know them. I mean, the announcers don't know them. It's a pretty complicated system, and this would simplify it, which I think would also be in the best interest of the game.
Now, as riveting as that was, and it's hard to believe that anyone would vote against anything that might have been advocated there, there is a way, there is actually a way, you could have spiced it up a little.
In the last decade, we haven't seen a missed field goal from under 19 yards. That's been 100%. The PAT percentages in the last two decades have not gone below 98%. And I want to say 6 of the last 9 years, they've been over 99%. Last year, 99.6 or whatever it was. So we're really talking about a non-competitive play. I can't imagine the fans are excited about seeing a play that is 99%, 99.6% accurate. I personally feel that we've also made it virtually illegal to block a kick. We can't hit the center. We can't overload. We can't push, can't jump, can't land on anybody. So it's very difficult competitively to play the play. The proposal was the 25-yard line, which puts those kicks in the 88 to 85% range, somewhere in there, which we felt was a more competitive play. Not married to that yard line in particular, just say the general concept behind the proposal was to make it a more competitive play than 99.6%. I also just say on a personal level, I think the replay rules are very lengthy, obviously, and confusing. And of course, before every game, the officials come over to us and talk about, remind us what can and can't be reviewed, and the times they have to talk to each other about that. 4 pages of rules on replay. I don't really know them. And I should, but it's hard for me because they change. I can't imagine the fans know them. I mean, the announcers don't know them. It's a pretty complicated system. And this would simplify it, which I think would be in the best interest of the game.
Your Honor, the prosecution rests.
And they still knocked it down.
Because it wasn't presented properly.
Yeah, it's all delivery. It's all delivery.
Still not it. You are, yeah, it was a fantastic delivery, Jack, but you're dealing with people who have made up their minds already. They've made up their minds about what they want and what they don't want. And so they don't care about the entertainment value.
You know, while I was across the hall with Bill Smith, recording that, I felt like Bill Belichick was my Cyrano de Bergerac, you know? I felt like he was writing the poetry, and all I had to do
all
was
you had to do was just
yeah, the content of what
deliver.
He's saying is dead on.
He's right.
Now I know this is way, way, way outside the box, and the first reaction to change is almost always negative, but consider this, that all points after touchdown have to be from the 25-yard line, and the only stipulation is that you've got to have at least 2 offensive players 5 or more yards behind the line of scrimmage, that being maybe the kicker and the holder, okay? 1 point for a kick, 4 points for getting the ball across the goal line by pass or by run. Now, if you're a TV executive about to roll out another $9 billion check or whatever it is, think about it. If a team is down by 9 and they've got the ball, you hold the audience. It's not a 2-score game.
4 points?
From the 25-yard line. It's such a low percentage play, but come on. You got to think about it. Just think about it. Don't just out of hand, just don't say, that's dumb.
I am thinking about it.
Because it's got to be more than a field goal. It's got to be worth more than a field goal. It's a 1 play, 25 yards for 4 points or a kick for 1. Now you actually have to think about
it. But you have to present that Belichick can't. That is a terrible, terrible sales job by Belichick. I'm trying to compare, like, if you two walked into my home to sell me a vacuum cleaner, they would say, do it this way, Bill, and they'd bring him into the sales office and play you selling it. And you might be able to sell me on a 4-point play.
But why
shot.
Why do you have to sell it at all? Because it makes sense. Even if he said, I'm not going to say anything here, read this piece of paper. Hey, you know, take a couple of minutes, guys, and read this. This is what I have to say. If he just emailed his thoughts or if he just wrote them down.
CC says, all right, rules committee. Okay.
It makes sense, doesn't it? Why do you have to sell the NFL? I mean, right. I love the sell job, but why do you have to sell him on this? It makes so much sense.
The right. trouble is they didn't accept all the things that he was talking about either. I mean, common sense things like no overtime in preseason. How could that even be a vote?
Right.
How did they not just say, you know what? Overtime in preseason is really dumb. Yeah, it's just dumb. We're just going to drop it.
How
but
they not
didn't
have,
do it.
How do they not have cameras in the end zones?
On the pylons.
How do they not have cameras on the pylons?
Because they don't have any money. The league is going poor, Michael. They don't have any money to get this stuff done. We need a bake sale and a car wash, like Belichick said.
And the commissioner makes, how much does the commissioner make again?
$40 million.
$40 million last year, yeah.
They don't have any money.
Glad it's a non-profit. I'm Putzes. Glad it's a non-profit.
I mean,
Idiots.
Hockey can only hope to be a major sport like that, Jack.
Because, you know,
I'm tweaking Jack over here.
Although, I will say this. The NFL is centralizing replay review, which follows whose lead? the National
exactly
Hockey
right.
League. Thank
and,
you.
And
they
you
got
guys
it right.
know this. You guys know this from working on TV. I mean, TV, you don't make any money from TV. They don't pay all that well. So when Bob Kraft brags about of the 35 top programs last year, 34 were NFL related. Okay, how do you say that and talk about the best TV deal in sports and you don't have the money to put cameras in the pylons?
I think they ought to have a camera in every blade of artificial turf.
We will be back to work tomorrow night.
You bet.
Those damn people from NBC aren't taking this game from us.
Thank goodness.
I was just teasing Jack.
Texter, well, speaking of teasing, Texter says, Jack, when was the last time you were at an NFL stadium? You cannot comment on this.
They're listening.
Jack, good to see you. I'll see you tomorrow
Thanks.
Night.
Great to see you, Dale.
We've Michael, got much more to come in just a couple of minutes. 617-779-7937 is the telephone number. The AT&T text line 37937. Sports Radio WEEI.